fourth Aliyah of Toldos was a relatively brief Aliyah, certainly compared to other Aliyahs seen recently, and especially for this parsha, because the whole story of the birth of the brothers is in the first Aliyah. The first Aliyah is very jam-packed. And this fourth Aliyah, which is really appropriate right in the middle of everything, but is very brief, but has a lot of relevance, as we've often found timely connections in these Aliyahs. So really the undercurrent of this Aliyah is essentially the struggle of the Jew with anti-Semitism. And it's a topic of much of the commentary that you find to this Aliyah. And of course, coming on the horrific week that we've had this week for Klal Yisrael, the barbaric expressions of anti-Semitism that we've encountered. So an Aliyah that has that focus is coming in a very timely fashion. So the Aliyah begins, Pasuk of Gimel, Vayal Misham Be'er Shava, that Yitzchak left, he left from there, and he went to Be'er Shava. So here again, right away, you see the theme of anti-Semitism, of the Jew leaving because of tensions, because of hatred directed at him. And the Lutzke Rav of Zalman Saratskin writes in the Znaim LaTorah that he didn't want to leave right in the midst of Machlokas, because that's part of the nature of anti-Semitism, that the Machlokas will follow you from place to place, and the hatred will follow you from place to place. So he waited for a little bit more of a peaceful environment. And Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky comments that because of the hatred of the surrounding people, so he wanted a little bit of distance, and the more distance he got, the farther away he got, the more he saw that it was getting better. So he wanted to go further and further. And specifically, Be'er Sheva, Rabbi Yaakov comments as well, based on a medrash in Bereishis Rabba, Sadi Dalid, that Be'er Sheva was apparently, we see, a place that was special to the Avos, was special to Avram as well, built a Mizbeach there also. It was a place that was holy in their attitude, and was a place of Menucha, when they were in moments of tension and crisis, they would turn to Be'er Sheva. So what happens to him there? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to him. The Pasuk says, Vayera Elav Hashem Balayla Hahu, Vayomer Anochi Elokei Avram Avicha, Altira Ki Itcha Anochi, Uberechticha Vihirbesi Es Zaracha Bavu Avram Avdi. So if you just look at the literal reading of this Pasuk, so it's a very positive message, right? This is pure encouragement. Kadosh Baruch Hu is coming to Yitzchak and saying, don't worry, I am on your side, I'm going to be with you, and you're the son of Avram, that's a very big plus. Apparently this is the only place, some of the Mefarshim point out, this is the only place where you find this expression, Avram Avdi, the emphasis of Avram being the Eved Hashem, and this is a message which seems like a purely positive one. But once you look a little bit at the comments of the Mefarshim, so you see there are a couple of points that could be interpreted in more than one way. So for example, the Baal HaTorah points out that here the usage of the name Elohim is an indication that it's a different type of relationship. That Elohim connotes din as opposed to rachamim, and this is different for the relationship to Yitzchak than it was the relationship with Avram and Yaakov. And the Baal HaTorah says that we see from here that HaKadosh Baruch Hu related to Yitzchak through the Midas HaDin, which, as we'll discuss a little bit more, that was the Midah of Yitzchak himself, that Yitzchak was a personality of Din, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu related to him that way in contrast with Rachamim. So there is much discussion about this in the Sefer Som Derech, from Simcha Zoslabroi, the Rosh Yeshiva of the Chevron Yeshiva. Chevron was also brought to mind this week, you know, in light of the history of horrific anti-Semitism. So we remember that the Chevron Yeshiva already 85 years ago was the site of a similar massacre to what we witnessed this week, and that's why the Chevron Yeshiva that Reb Simcha Zoslabroi was associated with is not in Chevron, is in Yerushalayim, but maintains the name of Chevron. So the Chevron Rosh Yeshiva has a whole essay about this, about the nature of the Midas HaDin as it relates to Yitzchak. So it sounds like from this Baal HaTorah, if you say that, okay, Yitzchak was treated with Din as opposed to the other Avos who were treated with Rachamim, so it sounds like we're saying that Yitzchak had a worse life. that they had it easy, Avraham and Yaakov had it easy, and Yitzchak had it tough. But that's not supported by the text. That's not what we find. Right? We don't find that Yitzchak suffered more than Avraham and Yaakov. If anything, as far as we know from the Chumash, he suffered less. You know, setting aside the whole question of the episode of the Akedah, who should we pay attention to more in the Akedah, to Avraham or to Yitzchak? But overall, it seems like he had it easy compared to the life of Avram and Yaakov. So what does it mean to say he was the subject of Din and they were the subject of Rachamim? So as he goes on over there to discuss, Sefer Samdarach is a beautiful Sefer in general. So he has short comments on the Psukim, and then sometimes he has longer essays in the back. So sometimes they'll connect the two, he'll have a comment, and he'll say, you want to really understand what I'm talking about, you should read the essays in the back. So this is one of those cases. So he has a short comment on this pasuk, and he has a much longer essay in the back where he goes into this in more detail. And he makes the point that the Baal Turim is not at all saying that Yitzchak had a harder life. It's not the case. But the point is that whatever suffering Avraham and Yaakov endured, that was itself a component of Rachamim. That was not based on Din. Perhaps it's a reference to the idea that Gemara has Masachas Brachos, that there are Yisurim that are considered to be Yisurim Shalahava, that even when we suffer, sometimes we suffer not as punishment, but we suffer for other reasons. Reasons that are essentially expressions of love, and that apparently that's what it meant for Avraham and Yaakov to go through whatever they went through. But Yitzchak, the point is that whatever he went through was an expression of pure din. And if that's the case, it's really quite a statement about the godless of Yitzchak. Because here we know that din is a very exacting standard. That's the whole point. And Chazal tell us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kaviyachal, however we relate to what this idea means, all of them achshavto, that he initially wanted to create the world based on din, and then it was clear that that's not going to work out, the world's not going to last, we're not going to be able to survive. So there was a shutfus, a joining of din and rachamim in the creation of the world. So the point is that humanity essentially cannot live up to a standard of din. So the idea that Yitzchak was able to live a life of din and to be treated with a midas ha-din is a tremendous statement about who Yitzchak was. But at the same time, as he discusses there also, so that could also tell us why it is, as a question that's often talked about when we talk about these parashios. So there are many who note that it seems Ki'ilu Yitzchak is somewhat passive, that we have so much detail about Avram's life and so much detail about Yaakov's life, and Yitzchak, it's really essentially just this parsha, and there isn't really very much told about what he does or doesn't do. So he suggests that this is part of it, that the notion, the description of the Avos is because we have a notion of Masa Avos Simen Labanim, that we are supposed to learn how to behave based on looking at the actions of the Avos. And while Yitzchak is certainly within the category of a role model of Masa Avos Simen Labanim, but at the same time, his life is not really one that we can emulate in that sense. And also, the way he phrases it there, the Samdarach, that we're going to build Klal Yisrael on the Avos, so we can't really build the foundation on Din. That's not going to last. We need the Rachamim as well. So therefore, Yitzchak's life is in the Torah, and it's important for us, but it's much more benistar. It's much more hidden. We don't have the same level of detail, and certainly the same level of explicit content that we find in the context of Avraham and Yaakov, again, which is not to downplay Yitzchak, and we have many statements of Chazal, where the Gemara tells us Yitzchak's a particular source of schus for the Jewish people, and that Yitzchak plays a very crucial role in the structure of our ancestry and foundation, but it's a different type of role. So Avraham and Yaakov are more relatable for us, and in a sense should be more relatable for us, and Yitzchak is not spelled out in the same kind of detail. So this focus on names in terms of Elohim versus Hashem, so it also is relevant to focus on another aspect of names, that here the Pasuk refers specifically to Elokei Avram Avicha. So one might consider that to be a little bit surprising, that presumably if Yitzchak himself is one of the Avos, so why doesn't he get the name associated here? I am your God. What's the idea of Davka invoking Avram's name? So there are those who suggest, Rav Soloveitchik had a drasha along these lines, that there is a little bit of a prodding being given here to Yitzchak, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, at least until this point, that you're here because of Avram, that I am the God of Avram. Avram is the one who really gets the merit for this. And that Yitzchak, you haven't started anything new. You've continued his derech, which is great, but to be an Av, right, like the same usage that we find by Avos Malachos and by other areas of the Torah where that word is used, to be an Av means that you are a new category unto yourself. So until now, you've just reopened the wells of your father, you've just continued the same derech as your father, so you have to create your own approach. That's what the Kodesh Baruch Hu was saying to Yitzchak in this appearance. That's how the Rav understood it. And ultimately, that is the case. And so when we daven Shmon Esrei, so we do refer to Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, that he's a part of the list. But at this stage, he's being told that essentially you're here on your father's chus. You're here because of the notion of continuing the mahalach of your father. Revolba, that came out a few years ago, Revolba is the author of the Ali Shur, but they came out a few years ago with comments of Revolba on Psukim in order, Shir Man Chumash. So he suggests here that this is also a part of the Midas Adin that we spoke to a moment ago, that he has a little discussion there, he has some proofs, he talks about how Machanchim, sometimes in his experience in Slobodka, he has some stories about this, about how historically there were Machanchim who Davka would relate to their better Talmidim through what he termed the Midas Hadin approach, which essentially was kind of holding them to a very high standard and not really showing them a lot of love, as we might say nowadays, not really conveying to them too much of a soft attitude and speaking to them in ways that might seem harsh. And the implication is that that was a way of provoking adherence to a higher standard, davka those people who are capable of a higher standard. So he suggests that that's also what is being conveyed here, that talking about Avram instead of talking about Yitzchak is part of the Midas Adin. The Kadosh Baruch was saying, listen, you're not here on your own schus at all. Don't feel too comfortable with yourself. In a sense, it's a way like a teacher who will davka say to a good student, davka won't let him get too comfortable, and will davka make him feel like he's not living up to his potential. That's essentially the nature of the message here. So it's all a question of perspective, because it's interesting to note that if we go to an earlier source, to Rishon, so Rabbeinu Bachaya writes on this pasuk that the emphasis on Avram is really a positive one, that it's a positive statement about Avram, that we're saying that yes, Yitzchak is a great tzaddik of accomplishment, but that accomplishment is because he was trained at the hands of Avram. And the Torah is telling you just the extent to which your hashpah is significant and the extent to which it's credited to you. That if somebody teaches others, if somebody inspires other people, if somebody conveys a message to others that ultimately has an impact, so even years later, even after they're no longer alive, it can happen that their merit is going to continue to grow and to increase. So here the Torah is saying that even though you have a great man here, you have Yitzchak, but it's because of Avram's teaching that he was able to reach this level, and therefore Avram continues to have schus, Avram continues to grow in stature, even when he's not doing anything himself, because the influence that he conveyed to others is being carried out, and that should be taken as an inspiring point, not as a negative statement about Yitzchak, but a statement that whatever we can say about Yitzchak is being credited as well to Avram, and that's a more positive type of approach. Hi.
According to this positive approach, what's the bracha saying? What is God trying to tell him? Don't be afraid. Your father's great.
I think it works either way. You know, God's making this message that he's going to be with him. That's the second part of the pasuk. Question is, what's it coming from, or what's the impact of putting that davka in the context of Avram? Is that a way of saying, listen, step up to the plate because you haven't done anything on your own, or you haven't set out your own path, so because of Avram, that's why I'm with you? Or is he saying, I'm with you because you deserve for me to be with you, and even the fact that you deserve it is a consequence of Avram's chus, so he's being associated with it. But I don't know if it has to change the content of that part of the message, that he's saying, I'm with you. So the Torah tells us that this is the message that he gets, and perhaps there is some level of Musar in it as well. And Shem Shunafal Hirsch has a little bit of discussion here, that he thinks that in a sense, Yitzchak didn't have the same initiative as Avram, in that Avram, as we discussed last week, it happened to, or 2 weeks ago, happened to correspond to Rvi there as well. It was 2 weeks ago that we discussed. This is also actually a comment of Rav Hirsch, when he talked about the settlement of Avram and Sarah, where they decided to live exactly. So he had a whole comment there, if you recall, we spoke about it then, about how there was a certain type of intent as far as where they were going to live to anticipate the birth of Yitzchak, that they would isolate him from negative influences while also kind of balancing his exposure. It was a whole discussion. But in general, so Avram kept himself protected from negative influences and from the materialism of the world around him. And Rav Hirsch is suggesting here that Yitzchak really should have taken initiative on his own to do that and not just be forced into it because of the hostility of the Plishtim. And once he finally decides to go on his own, so we see that he has essentially immediate success, that he digs the wells, and Avimelech, who hated him, now comes and gives him honor. We see that this was a successful plan for him once he starts taking that step, and things go better, and he has a diuk in the Lashon, that the Pasuk here says, Vayiven sham mizbeach, vayikru b'shem Hashem, vayed sham ahalo, vayichru sham avde Yitzchak be'er. So here he sets up the mizbeach, and he digs wells. So the language, the verb is vayichru sham. So many of the Mefarshim talk about exactly what that means, what's the relationship between that word and the chafira, without getting into melachos of Shabbos, but suggest that, for example, there's a first over there comments as well, that Harisha involves more work, and Chafira involves more work, more investigation. You have to really search around for the water. You have to keep poking here and poking there. And this is really just the beginning of the process, the Kriya. And essentially that was all he needed, that he struck gold right away, and metaphorically struck water right away, because he was now on a much more successful path. And that's what the Pasuk is, that's what the Pasuk is conveying. So to continue the theme of anti-Semitism, so here we talk about Sonei Yisrael. So here there is a comment that Don Lagon has, really, it's in his commentary to Megillas Esther. So we see, first the Pasuk tells us that Avimelech comes, Avimelech, Halach Elav Migrar, V'achuzas Mireyehu, Fichol Tzar Tzvo, that Avimelech comes to him from Grar, and he has also one of his friends, Achuzas, Upichol Sartzvo. Here we have that name again, the chief of the army. And the Mefarshim point out that Pichol is probably a name like Avimelech, which is probably a name like Paro. It's just like Paro is the name of all the kings, so it's not necessarily the same Paro from one time to the next. So too, Avimelech is the king, his name is used again and again. And Pichol is probably also a name that goes with a job rather than with any individual. So probably we have more than one Pichol, that whoever is in that position is referred to by that name. But the Pasuk goes on to say, it's V'yomer Aleihem Yitzchak. So Yitzchak says, what's going on? He says, Madua Basam Eli, V'atem Sineisem Osi V'tchalchunim Eitchem. So what are you coming to me for? So you hated me, and you sent me away. So what's going on? So here we have this theme of a sinna of the Jew. We talk about the Sonei Yisrael. So if you want to be precise in your language, according to the way the Vilna Gaon understands it, the Vilna Gaon in his commentary to the beginning of the ninth parak of Megillas Esther, so he writes that an oyev is somebody who wants to kill you, and a sonei is somebody who doesn't necessarily do anything, but he's happy when you suffer. That is a less active sense. He's not necessarily going to be the murderer, but he's going to be happy about it. And unfortunately, as we see today, in our current climate, so we have enough of both. We have enough oivim and we have enough sonim. And, we see both madregas, and they play a crucial role. That's also particularly relevant today, that the oyev is able to function because of the sonim. That sonim who are not opposed to it and who facilitate it through the message that they create. And it's part of the discussion that was going around this week, the question of certain figures within the Palestinian leadership. So are they ovim or are they just sonim? Are they both? And that's an active discussion. And that's we see here you have both these levels, the way that Rebbe Gaon understood it, meaning two distinct but clearly related things. So the next pasuk tells us what they said to him. So they said, "Vayomru ra'o ra'inu ki haya Hashem imach, v'nomer tina Allah benosenu benenu uvenecha v'nichrus avris imach." So they said, "Okay, we've seen that God is with you, and we thought that maybe we should have a deal. We should have a bond between us, an oath between us. So let's make a covenant together." So that idea of Ra'o Ra'inu, so here those Na'im Torah comments, again continuing his theme of the nature of anti-Semitism in the world. He says that here, this is the way things often happen, that you have Jewish people who are successful, and the nations of the world, they think that they're only successful on our backs, they're only successful on our cheshbon, and therefore they want to chase them out, they want to get rid of them, and then once they do that, they then later on realize that they're successful elsewhere, and their own economic status goes down. And when that happens, so they want the Jew back. So then they go and they say, "Now, you know, why don't you come back? Why don't you come make friends with us and join us again? And that'll be something good." So that's a pattern of anti-Semitism that you see again and again. On a different point, the Rebbe Yaakov Kamenetsky notes about this idea of Kiro Ro'inu, that to continue the theme of the Midas HaDin, so it's a very noteworthy point that Yitzchak doesn't have the same effect on others as Avram and Yaakov did. He doesn't have a same kind of an outreach personality. He's not bringing so many people under Kanfei HaShechina as his father and his son do, and that's a consequence of his Midas HaDin kind of personality. It doesn't have the same appeal. It's not the type of approach that's going to bring others in. But at the same time, you see that it's got a lot of potential for Kiddush Hashem, that even though it doesn't have the same kind of outreach effect, but it does have an effect on other people. It does earn the respect of other people, and it does serve as a source of sanctification of God's name. So that's what's being suggested here, that here you see Avimelech is saying to Yitzchak, "Yes, you're a hardliner, so to speak, you're a Midas HaDin personality, but that's impressive. It's impressive how you are consistent and faithful and what you've done with that." And as your back of comments, so not everybody has the same personality, not everybody has the same kochos, not everybody is cut out for Kiruv and go and be Moser Nefesh towards that endeavor, but they have their own ability to be much beyond others. So each one has its place. So that's what we see, that here Yitzchak, through his approach, also is somebody who has an effect on other people. And this idea, to go back to his Na'im HaTorah for a second, so he says, v'nichrasa bris, that he wants to make a deal. So essentially what they want is they want to make the same deal that Avram already had and that they disdained. So they're trying to kind of obscure the fact that there already was a deal between them and they had ignored it, they had let it falter. So now they see it's in their interest to endorse it, so they can't say, "Okay, now we want to be serious about it." So they phrase it as if, "Okay, let's expand it, let's enhance it, let's give it this extra level of commitment," kind of a way of making it look as if they're suggesting a new kind of relationship, when really this was the relationship that should have been there already, and they were responsible for it not being the actual nature of the relationship. So this next pasuk, and in order, you know, we try to always stick within our Aliyah zone, we have to compromise a little bit, that in order to fully understand what's happening here, so we have to dip one pasuk into the next Aliyah. We have to go up to Lamed. But if you see the whole... Sorry? Well, don't tell anyone. You can have this edited out of the recording after if you want, so no one should know. But just to understand what happens here, it's just the whole Mahalach. So they say to him, says, "V'yomru ro'o ro'inu ki haya Hashem imach." We see that God has been with you. Right? So we read that pasuk. And then the next pasuk, "Imtase manu ra kasher lo niganucha v'kasher asinu imcha rak tov v'nishalechecha b'shalom ata Atah Baruch Hashem. So if you shouldn't do anything bad to us, just like we, of course, have not touched you, haven't done anything bad to you, and we'll send you off b'shalom, and you are blessed in the name of God. So the next pasuk, just very short, next pasuk in the beginning of Chamishi, says Vayasl Hamishta Vayochlu Vayishtu. You see that apparently not only did he agree, but he makes a big suda in honor of them. So here, this idea of taking this deal and making a suda in their honor. So there is a very, I don't know if you want to call it optimistic, a very maybe generous-minded comment in the Sefer Ma'aris Yitzchak. I think I've mentioned a Sefer in the past, written by an acquaintance of mine. And Ma'aris Yitzchak writes that, why is the Torah going into detail about this episode? So he suggests, again, it's in a very kind of optimistic vein, but there is a basis for this in earlier sources, that in general, we'll compromise in two directions. We'll go back to Shlishi for a second. So there is a long Ramban. The Ramban talks about why all the story of the wells is here in detail in Parashas Toldos. Like we said, the real attention-grabbing sections of Toldos are about the Yaakov and Esav, the beginning and the end. And then you have in the middle story of the wells, and our Aliyah is even after that. But in the last Aliyah, in Shlishi, so the Ramban talks about the wells, and he thinks that that's a component of Mais Avos Sim Labanim. We were saying before that we don't have the overt kind of role modeling with Yitzchak as we do with the other Avos, but there is still certainly the component of Mais Avos Sim Labanim in a different way. It's more beremiza. It's more through allusion. So he suggests, the Ramban, he has a whole discussion about how the wells are symbolic through the names and through the action of the things that will happen to Klal Yisrael in the future, of Bayis Rishon, of Bayis Sheni, of the Golas, the whole story. They're all symbolized by the wells. It's all, in a sense, myself a similar bottom in a different usage of the word. That we were talking about it earlier today as the idea that it's role modeling, that the actions of the Avos should be a simon of how we should behave. But here it's more in the mystical sense of a simon, or you know, in the kind of omen sense, that things that happen in the lives of the Avos foreshadow things that happen to the descendants in the future generations. And it's in that vein that the Ramban talks about the Be'eros. So here, this is a sefer from Oris Yitzchak suggests that maybe this is also a part of the future vision. It's going to happen in the future. He's very generous-minded here, that he thinks that Lasa Lavo, part of the Geula, is going to be that the Umos HaOlam are going to come to the Jewish people and say, listen, you know, we were always really friendly with you, and we want to be friends in the future, and let's make up. And so we'll say to them, yeah, sure, you know, why not? And we'll even make them a suda, we'll even welcome them in, and we'll make overtures in order to make it more peaceful. He thought that maybe this is a remez, that this is what the future holds. And he says, in Kal V'chomer, that'll be true also about the Jews who are not religious, and the Jews who are not observant to the Torah, who did so because of a lack of knowledge of what the Torah really involves. So they're going to come with the same attitude, and all the more so, we'll say for sure, yeah, come join the Suda. We're going to welcome them in. Are you had a question about that?
Yeah. In regards to foreshadowing, is that only for general Klal Yisrael, or does that apply specifically to specific people as well?
I don't know. I have to, I guess, have a certain kind of insight to know what exactly the foreshadowing is, and probably it works much better in retrospect. So, I don't know if, I don't know how much, you know, the Maisa to draw out of that, but at least looking back, you know, the Ramban already in his day was looking back and seeing that there is certain symbolism in what had happened before him and how it could perhaps be read into this episode of the Beira. So I have to have a certain eye in order to know what to find. But this idea that there is, you know, this kind of open mechila that Yitzchak is expressing towards his enemies here, which again, you know, especially this week's very hard for us to relate to as a mahalach, but and you have to figure out exactly when it should be the mahalach, but there is a basis in earlier sources for this, the Shla and the Reish Yitzchak and others, which is discussed in other Sfarim, talk about that you see that what Yitzchak is doing here is that he is displaying the very praiseworthy midah of being Mavir al Midosav. That here he could say that I'm very hostile to you guys, I'm very unhappy with how I was treated by you guys, and I'm not interested in letting bygones be bygones, and I don't want to pretend like you've been nice to me all this time. And yet, he's willing to do it, and he's willing to kind of let the past be the past, and make a suda for them. So that's the quality of Maver El Midosav, and that's a tremendous thing, and Shla and others, they write that this is the way to be, that this is the attitude that we should have towards people who have offended us, that we should try to be Maver El Midosav, and move further. Now, it's hard to say that this is always the attitude. Presumably, there are contexts in which appropriate and contexts in which is not appropriate. So it's very striking. There is a statement that Rav Yonasan Eibschitz has in the his Sefer of Drushas, the Aris Dvash, which maybe helps to give it a little bit of context. There's a beautiful Sefer called Ish L'Rieihu, I think this was called, where it talks about various sinyanim of Midos in the Parsha, and he has a discussion about this in this week's Parsha. So the Yaros Tavash writes, Jonathan Eibschitz writes, that the Torah tells us, it's a fascinating insight, so the Torah tells us to remember a Malik. And so what's the idea of remembering a Malik? So it says, Jonathan Eibschitz, that the Midah of the Jew is such that were it not for the fact that the Torah tells us specifically to remember a Malik, we would be inclined to forget it. We would be inclined to say, let's let the past be the past, let's be mindful, let's not get caught up on old issues. So because a Malik represents evil in the world and represents that which is necessary to be vanquished before a Kadosh Baruch Hu, as the Pasuk says, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, my chair is not going to be complete until a Malik is destroyed. So he needs to command us to remember a Malik, because our inclination would be to forget about it. It's in order to counterbalance the actual instinctive midah of the Jews. So it's a fascinating idea. And what it seems to be saying is that there is a notion of absolute evil and of horrific misdeed that can't be forgotten. And that has to be, especially when it tells us something about the nature of the enemy and the nature of what is potentially out there. But things that are below that threshold, that the midah of Maver El Midosav is the proper midah. So the way Rav Yonasan Eibschitz seems to be saying it is that we have an instinct to be Maver El Midosav because we are B'nai Avram Yitzchak V'Yaakov, and therefore the Torah has to tell us that there are times when that's not what it's about. There are times when there is a Malik in the world, but there's also Maver El Midosav. So it's interesting, the whole idea of Maver El Midosav, just in terms of what that phrase means, by the way, Maver El Midosav, so Rashi in Maseches Rosh Hashanah translates it, and Rashi says that it means that literally the words mean to pass on your measurements, right? To pass up on your measurements. So the idea is that a person who's always keeping a grudge, so he's keeping track of the measurement, so to speak. He's saying that you hurt me 5 points, I have to hurt you 5 points. He's always keeping track so that he can take revenge. So somebody doesn't have to keep the score anymore, who can throw away the scorecard. That's, I guess, the most literal translation of Maver El Midosav, is to throw away the scorecard, is to say that you don't need to keep track. So if somebody does that, so the Gemara says, tremendous thing, Kadosh Baruch Hu mochlan lo al kol avonosav, that God forgives him for his averus. Kadosh Baruch Hu is Maver El Midosav, so to speak, with us, that he doesn't keep track either. And many of the Mefarshim explain the idea that Kadosh Baruch Hu treats us the way we can relate to. He has to treat us with an attitude that is understandable, so to speak. So if we have no sense of Rachmanes and we have no sense of being able to forget, so then he has to treat us with Midas Adin, because there is no other system we'll understand. But if we have a mentality of being Maver El Midosav, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu can be Mochalas and we'll understand it. It can be Maver El Midosav, so to speak, and it'll seem to us like a fair system. I think maybe we mentioned this a little bit before Yom Kippur. We're talking about the Chiyuv Mechila. You think about how incongruous it is that if somebody's bearing a grudge and is holding on to minor annoyances, and he comes on Yom Kippur and he asks the Kadosh Baruch Hu for mechila, so Kadosh Baruch Hu can say to him, you want me mochel you, but you can't be mochel that guy, you're still angry at what he did to you. So then your response will be, well, him, what he did was really bad. So what's God going to say to you, right? He's going to say, okay, well, you know, you're not so great yourself. So it's easy to understand when we think about it with that type of contrast, how it really is a stira to any effort on our part to try to get mechila, to try to have a Kodesh Baruch Hu forgive us for things if we can't relate to that attitude when it's appropriate. Hi.
Past couple of days we've been talking about Ma'avir Ameis Lufna Kala. So it seems like you make the Ameis go a different way or avoid the Kala in some way.
So you want to use a linguistic comparison and say
it seems like Ma'avirim is being used not as like pass,
but to put it aside.
Put it aside.
Channel it into a different path.
Exactly.
Maybe. Okay, it's an interesting insight. I said before, pass up, because I didn't want it to sound like my... I was just saying pass on your midos, so I didn't want to say sound like pass on in the sense of bimamshich. But it's interesting, maybe what you're saying is davka, pass up, not in the sense of forget about it, but pass on and pass it to a different place. I have to figure out exactly what that means, but it's the beginning of a thought to figure out where to take it. Hi?
I was just kind of curious to know, when you said that, if the Torah had commanded us to remember Amalek, we would have just the instinct to like forget about it. Does that apply to everyone in the world, just Jews?
In terms of what they should forget,
to like, forget about.
Well, he was suggesting that it's the Mida, that's a descendant, the Mida of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, that they have inherently this idea. It doesn't seem to be.
Do you think Jews are different in that sense?
That's what he was suggesting. He's suggesting that there needs to be a mitzvah in the Torah, because otherwise that would have been the tendency. We have to do a study of exactly who it applies to, but we have this notion that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, a tradition of Rachmanim, Gomel Chasadim, so as a part of that, so here Yitzchak is modeling this Midah, Mavra Midosa, that this is something that would have been inherent, and that was the way he understood it. You find in general, so we have an Isser in the Torah, there's a pair of Isserim, Losikom Velositor, we're not allowed to bear a grudge, and we're not allowed to take revenge. That actually also came up this week, right, because we were talking about in terms of wedding invitations and the like, and reciprocity, positive reciprocity, negative reciprocity. So the issue of taking revenge, bearing a grudge, the Gemara has a discussion about this in Maseches Yuma, where the Gemara invokes this idea also of Mavra Midosov. And the Gemara says that essentially the notion of bearing a grudge and taking revenge, the Gemara has a very mundane kind of example, because when you think about taking revenge, you have an image in your mind of vigilante justice, and the Gemara surprisingly tells us it's really about something much more prosaic. That, let's say, if somebody refuses to lend you an item, so therefore you decide you're not going to lend him an item when he needs it, so the Gemara says that's an example of not taking revenge. And then says the Gemara, if you do lend it to him, but at the same time you say, yeah, I'll lend you this item because I'm not a jerk like you, I'm a nice guy, I'm like some people I know. So that, says the Gemara, is an example of netira. That means you're bearing a grudge. It means you're holding on to it. Like in Aramaic, the word netira means to protect. So too, it has the same apparent connotation that you're holding on to something, that you're keeping it in your heart, you're keeping this offense in your consciousness, and it comes out when you say to the guy that I'm a nicer guy than you. So that's a violation of netira. So the Gemara has it in this context, and there's a whole back and forth that the Gemara essentially says that this is true in this context. It's what the Gemara calls a monetary context, because this is about property and resources, that you don't lend to somebody your stuff that they didn't lend stuff to you. So in that context, so the Gemara says that's what it's about, but if it's a tzaira de gufa, if it's a more personal issue, so then, the idea is that apparently there is no prohibition of nekima netira. That sounds like the ikar hadin, the Gemara says. But then the Gemara goes on to say that even if that's true, still, kol ha-maivir al-midosav, mochom al-kol ha-banosav, that we encourage one as a midah to be maivir al-midosav, and if one is in the category of ne'lovim, v'yenim olvim, shomim cherpasim, v'yenim meshivim, a person is the type who is able to hear his insult and his disgrace, and not feel a need to respond. So then we say, V'ohavav k'tzeis ha'shamish b'gvurasa, this person has a wonderful relationship with God, it's a big source of blessing. So that's great. Then the Gemara goes back again and says, That's all if the person is not a Talmud Chacham, if the honor of the Torah was offended. So then, says the Gemara, that the Talmud Chacham has to be nokeim v'noter kenachash. He has to be able to respond like a snake. And many Mefarshim say that the snake is not a simon of viciousness, as it sounds, but the idea is the snake, like the snake of Gan Eden, who is told that he has... Sorry? No, actually not, but that, I mean, that you can suggest that way also, but many Mefarshim say that it's not about that, but that the same way the klala of Nachash is that he eats dirt, right? That's the klala. What's so terrible about that? It's not really so gishmak, right? So he's sustained by dirt, but he has no enjoyment from eating. So too, it might be necessary for the Talmud Chacham to respond, but he won't get any hanah from it. It won't be something that he feels is a personal joy for him to have to take this action. And then again, the Gemara concludes really that he should let somebody else do it. A lot of back and forth in terms of this Gemara. So it seems like there is this distinction over there that there's a pretty limited sphere where you have this prohibition, the Kima Natira. And if it's personal, then the prohibition doesn't really apply. But it's not clear that that's really true, lahalacha, because you find that some of the Rishonim don't record any such distinction, like the Rambam and the Sefer Achinuch, they don't record any such heter, so to speak, in the Kima Natira. And the Chafetz Chaim, in the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, so he assumes, therefore, you have to say that it's a Sveika Daraisa, it's Nisa Daraisa, Losikon Velositor, and the Rishonim are in dispute as to whether or not there's any heter for personal suffering, and therefore we have to assume there isn't. L'halacha, if you assume Sveika Daraisa, be machmir on all Nekimu Netira. And the question is, so first of all, if these Rishonim disagree with the Gemara, so what's their basis to do so? So the truth is, there are a couple of other Gersos. There's a different Gersa in this Gemara, and there's a Medrash, and other statements in Chazal which might contradict this Gemara, or may reread this Gemara. So some understand that it's not really a chiluk between Mile de, let's say, Dere Mamonos and Tzara de Gufa, Tzara de Mamona and Tzara de Gufa, but in some rabbinic sources it says Mile de Shmai and Mile de Alma. But essentially, if it's worldly things that aren't really so important, okay, so then you should be mechel. But if it's a covered shamayim, so then you have to take action. It's in keeping with the same statement the Gemara has about Talmidei Chachamim. But in any event, so you find that this chiluk, the Tzara de Gufa, is not brought by the Rambam or the Sefer Achinuch. So it's interesting to consider why that might be, if we give them a textual basis to disagree. But what's the svara? So the Svara, it's interesting if you look at the Rambam, so the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvahs and the Mishnah Torah, so the Rambam says that the problem with revenge is that things will go on forever, that everyone keeps score, you get the Hatfields and the McCoys, so you get generation after generation where each one is keeping score and extracting from the other, and that's what makes the world fall apart. That's what it says, this is a bad sign for the Kiyum HaOlam. Some of the Gersos, it says Kiyum HaAretz, so it's not clear why you say it's about the Eretz Yisrael more than about the whole world. And some of the Mefarshim say it means that Gemara tells us that we lost Eretz Yisrael, we're in Galus because of Sinas Chinam. So therefore he's saying that if you want to get back in, you have to counter the Sinas Chinam. You can't let every little thing get on your nerves. So that every little thing is important because some discuss, for example, in the Sefer Yad HaKatana, so there's a whole discussion about this, that it does seem in the Torah like we do have a concept of revenge. We have a concept of justice, which is more than just proportionate. So, for example, we have a concept that Eitz Omeim is executed, even though he didn't actually succeed in killing anyone else. If somebody is caught with stolen property, he has to pay kefal, not just pay it back, but he has to pay double. So sometimes we do seem to have what seems to be vengeance. So he says that that's exactly the point, that the Torah is telling us there are certain things that are big things and that we need a justice system to enforce those big things because that's crucial to keep society from falling apart. But at the same time, we're saying that what's beneath that threshold is not such a big deal, and that if you want to keep society from falling apart the other way, so then you have to be able to be mochel on those things and to not keep a grudge and to not hold on to it. And that's the way the Rambam is getting his conclusion, perhaps, because if it's based on that, so there's no chiluk between Tzara de Mamon and Tzara de Gufa. If it's something which is too small to be above the threshold of punishment, so then it's not big enough to keep in your mind and to bear a grudge about, and you have to be able to get past it. Hi.
So is this similar to Rav Eibeshitz's idea that maybe we would naturally not take revenge?
I don't know, but not necessarily, but I think that it's similar to his idea in that I think his focus on a malik, especially in the context of these other mafarshim, the earlier mafarshim was saying that Mavra Midosov, you know, here we're talking about the enemies from the Umos HaOlam, the Plishtim, and we're saying that we're not just talking about, for sure we mean your friend in the Beis Medrash, and the Pasuk talks about Am Yisrael in that context, but so the Pasuk is not talking about the Umos HaOlam. But here, the Yitzchak model, the way the Shlah understands it, and the Reishis Chachma, they're very explicitly saying that this is a model in interaction with the nations of the world too. So, to take that together with Rivenos and Eibshitz, you have to say the same kind of idea, that there are some things that are big deal things, a Malik is a big deal thing, and that you shouldn't be Mochel on. And that it also tells you that the smaller things, by contrast, you should be Mochel, and you have that balance. You have that ideal. So perhaps that's what you find here also, and that's what the Rambam maybe is getting at, that the Torah has a system for dealing with the big things, and that is also a statement that the small things are supposed to be ignored. Now it's interesting, there is a concept in the Gemara. The Gemara talks about a notion of tarumas, which generally translates as grievances. The Gemara says there are certain things people can do in business which are not actionable. You can't take somebody to Beis Din and have it recovered. But even though it's not actionable, the Mishnah has language, Ein lo alav lo tarumas. All you have is a grievance. So what does that mean, Ein lo alav lo tarumas? So some understand it means nothing. That's the point, that you have no ability to collect. So all you have is your grievance. You don't have anything. But many understand it means something, and some understand that it means that it's a heter for netira, that you're allowed to bear a grudge. So it must be that there is this kind of middle ground where the Mishnah is saying that there are some things which are significant enough that they're not so significant that the court can actually take action on it, but it's significant enough that we have to have some kind of social corrective so you're allowed to bear a grudge about it. But again, you need to have a standard, you need to have a mission to tell you this you're allowed to bear a grudge about. This is something that rises to that level. And apparently, again, the message is that there's some things which are big enough that we have to take action, and everything else, if you could be Mavra al Midosov, that's either recommended or actually obligatory. And the Gemara in Maseches Tainis has a very powerful statement, because it's one thing, you know, the Gemara you find elsewhere, it just says that Mavra al Midosov is good, Mavra al Midosov is a source of bracha, but the Gemara in Tainis tells us, Beferish, that one of the Amoraim davened for rain, and he didn't have Hatzlacha, and then another one was more Matzliach, and the only reason is Matzliach is because he's Mavra al Midosov, because he has this Midah of being Mochel people easily, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to treat him the same way, which is a very powerful statement, and that's really something to consider and to look up to. So we have to figure out exactly where this fits in. The Sefer HaChinuch we mentioned also doesn't have the chiluk between Tzara d'mon and Tzara d'gufa. So there also, if you look at the way he explains it in the Sefer HaChinuch, you could understand why, because his theory also doesn't lend itself to such a distinction. And that the idea is that the way he understands it is that a person has to approach things philosophically the way he describes it, and that he should understand that whatever happens in his life that's bad, so it happens for some kind of reason. We don't know whether it's an onesh, or it's a nisayon, or it's a gamzulatova, or it's really not what he thinks it is. There are a whole list of reasons why it might be. We don't know which reason it is. But one thing we do know, that if you're going to focus on the human shliach, if you're going to say, oh, it's all him, he did this to me, so that will be a distraction from whatever the point of the experience is. So the Torah is essentially saying that if you want to know what you're meant to get from life, so then to focus on the human messenger in the middle and say it's all because of him, that's not going to be a helpful attitude. And I think we suggested here once that, we talk about this year, maybe that in the Tochacha, so you find in Yanim of, for example, the Pasuk says, V'nastim v'ein rodeif, to talk about this year, that you're going to run away and there won't be anyone chasing you. So Mefarshim will ask, well, isn't that better? Better than the alternative, right? Better that you're running away and somebody is chasing you, so you'd rather not have to run. If you're going to have to run, it better turn out there's nobody chasing you. So you could suggest what it means is that v'nastem, you're going to have problems, you're going to have to run away. V'ein rodef, there won't be some rodef that you could point to and say it's about him. It's just going to be between you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's going to be obvious because there's no human being that you can say it was his fault. And that's essentially what the Sefer HaChinuch is saying, that the attitude should be, it's not about the human being, it's about you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and focus on the Tira is going to be a big distraction. It's interesting though, there are Rishonim who do have the Chiluch, and do assume that the Yisr Nekim and Tira is specifically about things like the Gemara describes, about not lending property to somebody who didn't lend property to you. So what exactly is the message? So they explain that it's there in the context over there in the middle of Parshas Kedoshim. So it's there together with V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, mitzvah of chesed, things like that. And that what the Torah is saying is that you should be a personality of chesed, you should give to others, and you shouldn't say, I'm only going to give because they gave to me. And if they don't give to me, they don't deserve chesed. And that's not the attitude. It's the Torah saying in the whole context, love others, help people, and even though they don't help you, even though they're not going to lend you property, that's not a reason not to do it. You should still continue to engage in chesed, even despite the fact that they're not acting that way to you, and you should do it with a full heart. You shouldn't do it with an attitude of netira. So it's interesting that you find this also here in the Mefarshim here, that the point is not just that he's machal, but also that he makes the suda, that he's acting with kindness to them, that he's going out of his way to shower a chesed upon them, even though they haven't treated him with chesed. So that's the message. Again, it's a very complex message. You have to figure out exactly when it's appropriate and when it's not. But it's quite a fascinating idea just to see how the Mefarshim are suggesting that this is really what Yitzchak is modeling here and what it should be the model. So interesting, as we look at this last pasuk in the Aliyah, so they say, oh, we've been great to you, right? We've never done anything wrong. You know, it really sounds like real thuggish behavior. You know, they beat you up and they say, nothing happened here, right? You know, never had this conversation. This never took place. That's essentially what they're saying. They're saying, right, im tase manu ra, kasher lo yaganuch, v'kasher asinu imach rak tov, v'nishlach ha-mishalom, ato ato baruch Hashem. Right? So it's saying, we've always been great to you, everything's been fine. Isn't that how you remember it, right? Wasn't it like that? Everything's been perfect, right? Nothing to complain about. So that's how you should remember us. So it's interesting that Naim Latar and Rav Shamshon Ufal Hirsch have pretty much word for word the exact same comment on this pasuk. They say the exact same thing. That this is often the attitude, again, in their whole discussion of anti-Semitism. They think that if they take all your stuff, but they don't kill you on your way out, that's good. Right? So all they did was harass you like crazy, but they didn't actually beat you senseless and kill you, so that's great, right? So that you should be happy with that kind of treatment, that's enough. That's a mila in the eyes of people like this. So that might be true. Maram Shik has a little bit of a more positive spin on this. Maram Shik was, as we mentioned, the Talmud of the Chassam Sofer. So Maram Shik writes that you see the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu through how even when he's punishing you, even when you're going through hard times, that there should be some kind of a smile, so to speak, some kind of an expression of chesed within that context. That's dafka when you see the love. So they were saying to him that, yeah, we treated you horribly, but we could have treated you worse. And you're lucky, so to speak, that we didn't treat you worse. But what Maram Shik is adding here is that the fact that you weren't treated worse by us is itself the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he's expressing towards you, Yitzchak. So you see that if that's the case, so ata Baruch Hashem. So you, now we see, you are blessed by God. You must be blessed because even when we were trying to give you a hard time, we didn't go all the way and make things worse. That shows that you are blessed by God. So there's a lot of complex messages in this Aliyah that are particularly resonant for us one way or another in a week like this, to try to figure out exactly which part to emphasize and which part to de-emphasize, and which part is one aspect relevant, which part is another aspect relevant. But at least to end on this note, that even in the hardest of times, that we should see the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we should see the simanim of Ahava, we should see that we are beloved to God, that even in these moments of suffering, even in the moments of great crisis, there should be glimmers of a smile, glimmers of a hope, and moments that we can point to as expression of God's love for the Jewish people. that should be our bracha, and that should be our nechama in times such as this. So I wish everyone a good Shabbos. We'll have a mincha. Ben, you want to go first?